Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
We made this.
This is Tony, Network Chief of We Made This. As you know, our podcast network brings together a brilliant assortment of talent who talk about all kinds of pop culture content, such as the episode you've just listened to, or maybe you're just about to listen to. We're not going anywhere, but we'd love to keep the lights on for even longer if you're able to support our network on Patreon. For just £2 a month, you get your name in lights and the satisfaction of knowing you're helping us produce more great audio. And for £3 a month, you'll get your name in lights, but you'll also get access to an exclusive bi-monthly podcast from the We Made This talent pool on podcasting, pop culture, and, well, you tell us. We'll take your suggestions. For less than the price of a coffee per month, you can help keep We Made This going. Just head to patreon.com/... We Made This, that's patreon.com/ We Made This, and get the ball rolling. Now, back to your scheduled programming. Welcome back to You Have Been Watching, a podcast devoted to looking in depth at the fascinating curiosity that is the British television sitcom, part of the We Made This podcast network. I'm your host, Tony Black, and I'm joined by my co-host, Robert Turnbull, to discuss Paris, a cult Channel 4 comedy from 1994, starring Alexei Sale and written by Graham Linehan and Arthur Matthews. Set in 1920s Paris during the interwar era of art, expressionism and jazz, Sale plays tortured artist Alain Degout, a nihilistic, profane painter in poverty who believes no one appreciates him in his time and spends his days grumbling about it in his studio, at the local bar, and to anyone who will listen, including the Fay Rocher, educated Minotti and maudlin Valerie, as he seeks to find fame and fortune and sit along the artistic greats of human history. So, Rob, this is a very curious one. We've just done 40 Towers in the Office. We're going into far more cult territory here, aren't we, with Paris? Well, we should start really with our relationship to it. I'll be up front and say I watched it when you told me it existed, because I'd never heard of it before, if I'm honest. And pointed this one out to me, so I watched a very, very rough cut of it on YouTube that somebody had uploaded from their video recorder on VHS, which was amazing because they still had the adverts from like 1994, and that was
the best bit.
Incredible. Yeah. Amazing watching those. It took me right back to my childhood, because I was 12 years old when Paris came out for the first time. So I watched the very, very rough cut of it because it's never been released on DVD. It's never been re-aired on Channel 4. It's not on the on-demand Channel 4 service. It is gone. This, the only place that I know of that you will see this is on YouTube. So it was all new to me. What is your relationship with Paris particularly?
Well, so I watched it first time round. I'm I'm a smidge older than you. Not a great deal, but I was about 14, I think, when it came out. Yeah, so I watched it. I watched it first time round. I was, you know, from childhood. I mean, that sounds really weird when you think about his output, but I was a massive Alexei Sale fan. A really, really big fan of Alexei Sale. And also something which we've probably touched upon, we'll probably touch upon the more we talk about these sitcoms. There was a strange period of time which young people don't understand, where you watched anything, regardless of what it was, because of the time slot.
Yeah.
So Paris was on before Drop the Dead Donkey. And like, Drop the Dead Donkey was must see. I always had to watch Drop the Dead Donkey. Or, you know, Whose Line Is It Anyway? And Paris was in this slot. It was on there. So I watched Paris with trepidation when it first came out. Because I was a big Alexei Sale fan, but I was not a Linehan and Matthews fan. Because, of course, Alexei Sale, you know, lots of sketch shows. And sketch shows are very much, you know, hit and miss. And I was not a fan of the work that they wrote for him. But, you know, they're doing a sitcom, see how it goes. So, yeah, I watched it first time round. And in the years since, I basically thought only me and my father remembered it. It's like my father and I would have, occasionally it'll come up in conversation. And I felt like I was, you know, like, did I dream it? It's like, am I the only person who remembers this bizarre sitcom?
Yeah, I think it's definitely one that has faded into the arcane mists of television history, this. I mean, I was watching sitcoms when I was 12 years old, but and I remember loving... I never really watched Drop the Dead Donkey. That is one, actually, that I need to watch as an adult because I think I will get a lot out of it. I remember watching bits of that and it never... Well, oh, I never really great, got it, yeah. I think, at that age. And I never really carried on watching it, to be honest. Yeah. I think I would now. So I'm looking forward to doing that eventually. But I remember watching... I loved Whose Line Is It Anyway? I used to watch that religiously all the time. So,
oh, well, of course.
It's just
yeah.
the best. And so I'm surprised I never really watched Paris. I certainly don't remember it being on. And I don't know. I wasn't really into Alexei Sale, to be honest. I don't really remember watching him. Because obviously, Linehan and Matthews, and we'll talk about this, but they very, very quickly after this went on to start writing Father Ted, which obviously became a massive and quite justifiably brilliant sitcom. And they before had written, like you said, sketch show stuff for things like... Alas, Smith and Jones, the all-new Alexei Sale show as well, which I don't really remember. Yeah, did you watch that with him in, with his sketches?
Yeah, so I did. It's like, I mean, I guess if you kind of like properly look back at it, I technically was watching stuff that was, you know, not necessarily age appropriate or potentially some of it would have been going over my head. But yeah, from quite a young age, I used to watch all these shows. And I watched the young ones when I was quite little, and so Alexei Sale was hilarious to me as a sort of however old I was, like 7-8 years old maybe, watching the young ones, which is a group of silly men being silly, and then this slightly weird tubby guy walks on and just goes, "Hey, yeah!" I start screaming at everyone, just like, "Ah, oh, it's hilarious!"
Yeah,
and I used to love the Alexei Sale sketch show because they used to open with him doing these kind of like great sort of like monologues of basically sort of like walking, you know, walking places in his suit with his shaved head and stuff. And so I really, really enjoyed that as a kid. And I'm sure there was plenty of stuff in there that was going over my head as a kid. But I also quite liked that sort of very left wing, right on, you know, sort of like, it was sort of like the next wave of alternative comedy,
yeah.
Which is a phrase that we all hate, but we use it as an identifier, obviously. So yeah, I was a big fan of his sketch show.
He sort of came in the wake of like Mail, Edmondson, French and Saunders, that kind of thing, didn't he? They were obviously still around at that point. I mean, I remember loving the young ones, and I'm sure we'll do the young ones and Bottom at some point and do Mail and Edmondson because
yeah,
they are
absolutely.
Two of my heroes and as I'm sure they are yours, but like I loved the young ones. I wore the VHS out of that back in that double, there was a double VHS but you probably had this, it was a double VHS, it was these massive tapes, these two tapes, and I loved that for that show. So yeah, and that doesn't always necessarily jive with what I love, really. The anarchic nature of like the comic strip stuff, which I do sometimes get and I don't. And that was very, very bespoke. It was very particular tastes, people who liked the what was termed that alternative comedy. So I suppose Sale sort of came in the wake of that, didn't he? But he it's funny because he was huge, wasn't he, back then? I mean, he was huge in the 80s. He was huge in most of the 90s.
Yeah.
And he sort of faded a bit, hasn't he? He's not the kind of person that you hear people talking about much anymore. And I wonder why that is.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think that... I mean, there are many reasons we could speculate on. Part of it could be that he's sort of too socialist left-wing now that his material, you know, doesn't land so well. It could be that, you know, he tried a few projects that didn't. I mean, it's like Paris was basically a flop. You know, it shouldn't have been. It's like on paper, there's a lot of like good things on paper, but it was basically a flop, not a career-ending flop. But it was, you know, if Alexis Sale has had like a few things like that, you know, he did a couple of sort of like random little kind of like almost experimental comedy films and stuff. And I think maybe the kind of material that he wants to produce now is not the kind of material that people want to see. I don't know if that's quite fair, but he's still around. And like so many of the kind, you know, like the Ben Eltons and such, like he's moved more, you know, Patrick Marber and these kind of people, he's kind of moved more into authoring, and, you know, he's written some books, and, you know, he's a bit more of an auditor on things, you know, you get him on shows to discuss things. So I think he's maybe just moved into a different sphere. And he still pops up now and again, sort of, you know, playing an Alexis Sale type character.
Yeah, because he's done some really varied stuff. I mean, I always remember him popping up in Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. As the, like, Sultan of whatever.
That was crazy to me as a kid, like mad. 9 or 10 years old. It's like, it's Alexis Sale. What's he doing here?
Yeah, just like trading like the villain access to his like land for a Bentley. I think it was, wasn't it? Something like that. But it and it. I think he is. So I mean, he does pop up in certain things, and I think he's. I think the aspect of the political aspect to his comedy is possibly why. You, I think you're right. You know, he is quite tub-thumping socialist. You know, he's talked about how he said in not so long back in 2009, which is comparatively, but he's not really been on telly for consistently for a long time. So this is fairly recent comparatively. But he said he's not active in left politics anymore. But he said, I still would adhere to those philosophical and economic ideas of Marxism that I got when I was 16. It seemed to me as true now as it did then. So I think he's... And after that, in 2016, he was very anti-Jeremy Corbyn. I think he described him as morally incorruptible in 2016. So he's still popping up, writing things for The Guardian about stuff as well. So he's around, but he's not really... He's not somebody that would, I think, get on television and do and front a sitcom. Because Paris is built around him completely, isn't it? I mean, it is very much trying to create a comedy character in the vein of a lot of the characters that you would see, you know, in the past. You know, Alain Degout is that grumbling, misanthropic, very, very... He might be set in 1920s France, but he's very, very British kind of sitcom character.
Oh, yes.
You know, so he does have, I suppose, even though he's kind of a hodgepodge of various different things, there is that it is clearly built around Sale's comic personality, I think, isn't it, Paris, and that character?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we'll get into shortly sort of like, you know, dissecting it a little bit more in terms of like performance and episodes and how good it actually is. I think that it is built around his character, but not necessarily his on-screen persona or how he was known. It's like, you know, because the stuff that he did, you know, whether it was in The Young Ones, which was a little bit more, you know, pantomimey, or even just in his sketch show, his persona was of this sort of an intelligent, sarcastic, but slightly shouty man, was quite often what he would do. It was this thing of, like, you know, stepping in and talking quite quietly and then kind of like yelling at some point, which I think is clear that they're playing into that, but it's based around his character and his ability to perform rather than his known persona. So I don't feel like it's not quite like, oh, here is Alexei Sale playing Alexei Sale in this show. It's like, well, here is Alexei Sale kind of playing to what you would argue are his performance strengths. But obviously it's like, you know, Alan is a far less pleasant and a far more corruptible character than Alexei Sale is. But he is kind of like a comedy. I wouldn't say he's a comedy standard, but there's a little bit of Basil Fawlty, and, you know, there's a little bit of Hancock, and there's a little bit of a little bit of Partridge. You know, there are all these kind of like very recognizable. There's something quite similar about that archetype of a character who is, he is the one, you know, the wannabe. You know, he's basically, you know, Alain Degu is basically shit Picasso. Or shitter Picasso. Because Picasso's pretty shit. Yeah. But it's like he's the contemporary. You know, it's like he just drew what would sell. So it's, you know, it's this idea of this character who desperately wants to be revered, but actually is, you know, he's not good enough. He's shit.
No, and that's where I you're absolutely right about Hancock. I mean, you know, that is a clear vein. I agree that there are Partridgian Basil elements in there. I also think there's a definite line to Rick Mayall as well. You could also have Rick Mayall play this character in a way, I think.
I think I can see a bit
of Richard in this from Bottom.
Yeah, I think that, you know, their working relationship was pretty close, and I suspect that Sale is channeling what he has seen. What he's seen Rick do.
Yeah, because there's a lot of, you know, it is that shouty Scouser kind of thing. You know, he's going, sod off, or you bollocks to that, and that kind of thing. But there's also that strong vein of sexual frustration, and there are gags about, you know, there are knob gags, there are things in there that are very Bottom at the same time. There's pratfalling, there's physical comedy. There's a level of anarchism, but it's not to the comic book mad extent of Bottom or The Young Ones. It is dialed down, but it's there. And I think that is something that he's sort of a... I think the reason that Alain Degu didn't stand out as a comedy character and has been forgotten isn't because the building blocks aren't there for a really great comedy character. It's like you say, it's that whole idea of the prosaic Brit being elevated to this point of pretentious genius when they're not. And I think that's... That in itself is really funny. The idea of Degu and being able I think we've still got that as British people, but, you know, we've talked before about how the great British comedy characters are failures. They are completely useless. They are self-sabotaging. They're never going to be successes. And Degu is absolutely in that same vein. He is on that same vein. But he's too similar to lots of the better characters with the better scripts in better shows that have come before him and after him, actually. And I think because Partridge didn't get cracking till about this point either. So, you know, he comes well after Paris, really, when he hits his peak in like I'm Alan Partridge and things like that. So I think that's possibly why nobody remembers, because I think if he really had stood out as a comedy character, I think people would have remembered Paris, and it probably would have got more than one series as well.
Yeah, I think that's a big reason for what. So,
Lucky Land Casino asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess.
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com.
Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at Chumbacasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
So it wasn't a success, and I actually think that a big part of that is exactly what you've just said. The character is not unique enough. It doesn't stand out enough. It's a very, you know, it's a very standard, sort of relatable British comedy character. But also, and you know, this will sort of launch us into a deeper analysis, I guess. Alexei Sayle is not very good. He's really bad in this. And it's highlighted because the supporting cast of, you know, like at the time, not particularly well-known actors are actually really good actors. There are some really good actors around him, all playing big, elaborate characters. And Alexei Sayle is the archetypal, you know, comedian doing acting surrounded by better actors. But he's really, really not very good at all. And I think especially at the time, unless you were a big Alexei Sayle fan, you probably wouldn't bother sticking with it. But because he's not that good, it doesn't really allow anything unique or anything. The only hook that the character has is being Alexei Sayle. And especially now, as you know, we were saying before, Alexei Sayle has kind of like sort of drifted from the collective consciousness. Nobody's going to go, oh, wow, Alexei Sayle, I've got to watch that. In the same way that they might, you know, somebody who's never heard of Filthy Rich and Cat Flap might go, oh, my God, like those guys are in that. Like, I had no idea. I need to watch that show because of, you know, the main three, you know, Rick and Aid and everybody in there. But for Paris, it's like, you know, people like Neil Morrissey, but nobody's going to go, oh, Neil Morrissey has a small supporting role in this sitcom. Got to check that out. So I think that, yeah, there was nothing unique about the character himself. And Alexei Sayle's performance is not strong enough to make that lack of uniqueness stand out. He doesn't elevate it. In fact, he kind of highlights what's wrong with it, I think. And you mentioned Rick, and it's like, especially doing this, you know, so like rewatching it, I just kept thinking that the show might have been better or may have had, you know, more legs if Rick Mail had played the role, because Rick Mail was actually a very, very good actor. Although he mostly focused on his kind of sort of characters, he was a very good actor who could have brought, because there are moments in this sitcom where they definitely, you feel like they're trying to go for some sort of almost like satirical depth. It's, you know, especially in the last episode, and it never quite lands, probably because Alexei Sayle's not quite, you know, good enough in his performance, and the writing just isn't actually very good either.
It's whether or not you could have done with, and maybe this is one of the reasons why Father Ted subsequently is much better received and much better, is that in that show Dermot Morgan was deadpan, and he wasn't Ted who was the most extreme character. It was everybody else. It was Mrs. Doyle. It was Dougal. It was Father Jack.
Yes.
And what Morgan did, he was very funny and he had great lines and he was a brilliant comic performer. But what he did was let everyone else be chaotic around him. Whereas the problem with Paris is that Degu is that character. He's doing all of that himself. Sayle is shouting and all this kind of thing. And it's a bit like, well, and that's why maybe, I don't know. I think if Rick Mail had done it or somebody like that, it might not have worked either. Because even though he's a better actor, I almost feel like what Paris didn't have was, it didn't quite nail that central performance. It didn't quite understand, I think, quite how to position that character. That was a funny idea, you know, the terrible artist in the middle of this era of expressionism who believes he's, you know, nobody can see his genius. That is funny, but it almost feels like it didn't have the elements that you needed to ground that character in some level of relatability, or him having, maybe it was also the scripts, in that I don't think the lines were funny enough either for Sayle to do what he needed to do with it.
No,
it's a difficult one. I think fundamentally he was a bit miscast, and I think the reason then what Linehan and Matthews do next is better is because they get some of those other elements right. for instance.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. So I think that you don't always, but the concept of the straight man, or at least the kind of looking at the world realistically character, is what Paris lacks. And I think it is a kind of a hangover from that sort of early anarchic, new wave comedy, of stuff like The Young Ones. But what you actually really needed, you needed Alan to be realistic and sensible. When all these sort of like foppish characters are running around doing all these kind of like 20s art cliches, you need him to be there realistically saying, all this art is rubbish. Or when he's running around being crazy and bizarre, you needed the other characters to be realistic. It creates this very bizarre world and this weird dynamic where everybody is weird. And so it's kind of hard as an audience to get into that. Whereas Father Ted, it's like they learn a lesson by Father Ted, I guess. And they realise that you need someone. When you're creating a world that bizarre, that anarchic and that surreal, you need somebody who is in some way grounded. Somebody who we as an audience can look at and kind of... And it's like, we've talked about The Office, we've talked about Fawlty Towers. It is about having Tim. It's about having Polly. It's about having somebody who is... They're engaged in that weird world, but they can have those moments where we lock eyes with them and go, yeah, you get it, we get it, this is weird.
Yeah, I think another example of that, to an extent, although it's not as clearly defined, was Linehan's Black Books that he did later on with Dylan Moran, which I think in that, I would say, that's a funny show. That, it's not always perfect, but it a lot of it is really good. And I would say Bill Bailey fills that function at times as well. He is a little bit more of the normal guy walking into this crazy situation. But then that show has three really good performers in it to anchor the comedy as well. It has three really strong characters played by really great actors who can do various different things at the same time. So even though when it is all surreal and they're all a bit surreal, it somehow works. And the episodes that don't work as well in that show are the ones that fall into this same kind of trap. And I think that's the thing with Black Books, whereas Father Ted never did that. Father Ted is like three seasons of almost complete gold because it has that central dynamic that never shifts. It does always have that front-loaded, I think. And I think that's why... I mean, the thing is, what's interesting is that Linehan and Matthews had a feeling it wasn't going to go well. Linehan has said, we knew that it was going to get badly reviewed. We had this tiny bit of hope in us. Maybe we were wrong. Maybe it's good. Maybe it's just us. Matthews was also worried because it was going up against Harry Enfield and Chums, which was huge at the time. Mm-hmm. I mean, I loved that show. I remember watching that.
Yeah.
And they wrote bits for that as well. And that was a massive, massive show at the time. So I think they almost... I mean, it's one of those things, isn't it? How is something like this ever going to be as populist as Only Fools and Horses, for instance, or something like that? Because it's set in 1920s Paris, for one thing. It's very bespoke in its setting, isn't it? And I suppose you could say the same about Father Ted, that it's set on this little weird little Irish island full of strange people. But I think what people understood about Father Ted was that it had maybe a setting, the Catholic Church. It had jokes and ideas that were maybe a bit more easy to understand and grasp. Whereas I think with Paris, it was all about a rather pretentious, old-fashioned world that I don't think people really necessarily immediately understood where the comedy was always coming from, maybe. And I think maybe that's part of the problem.
I think there's a double whammy that really sort of feeds off what you're saying there. And part of it is that the show is so incredibly derivative.
Yeah.
That's one thing. Like, the show is massively derivative. You can see Blackadder, under the label.
Yeah.
It's like this, like, they've tried so hard to sort of, Blackadder, but a bit zany, a bit more Channel 4. it's like, what if Blackadder was made by Channel 4?
Can you imagine?
But it's so Blackadder-y. But what it lacks in terms of what Blackadder had is that I think basically I don't feel like Linehan and Matthews actually had the knowledge or the understanding of the subject matter. Because the show, you know, occasionally it's sort of, you feel like it's kind of satirizing the 20s art scene a little bit, but it never does any really sophisticated or clever jokes. It never seems to stretch its understanding or its knowledge any further than, you know, an Art Deco poster.
Yeah.
It's like it's this weird thing. It's a postcard. And that's reflected actually in the production design, which is almost brilliant. You know, when they're like a genuinely good gag is the fact that every window you can see the Eiffel Tower through. That's brilliant. That's a good gag. And then when they're on the streets of Paris, any exterior scene is all designed to look like the sort of French artwork of the time. And that looks brilliant. But that's kind of shattered whenever they go indoors, which looks incredibly, you know, beautifully detailed, but incredibly real and realistic. And so as a whole, it doesn't maintain its sort of surreal artistic look, which is a shame. But I think that's part of the problem, is that the knowledge that the writers brought to it is nothing more than a tourist's impression of Paris. Whereas something like Blackadder, you know, has very in-depth and sophisticated understanding of history. And I think that for Paris to have been more successful, it needed to be cleverer. It needed to have a greater understanding of its subject matter. It almost needed to educate the audience. Not educate, but it needed to be insightful. If it had been insightful, it might have dragged us in a little bit.
No, you're right, because all it really does is trade on comic cliches in terms of the plots, doesn't it? Like, there's one episode where Degu thinks this great art critic has turned up, played by Windsor Davis. Not that I'm complaining that Windsor Davis is in it, because Windsor Davis was brilliant. I loved him in everything he did.
He's brilliant.
Just doing
brilliant.
His normal
everything
usual.
He does, yeah.
Doing his normal usual booming voice, boy. Love him. Love him so much.
I love art.
I love art. Yeah. Degu. He's just great. It turns out it's not him, you know, and there's been all this thing with his children, you know, and this kind of,
but
and it's that kind of thing. And you see that in lots of the others. One where he ends up getting arrested and there's a batty old judge and all this kind of, and it's a lot. It's not that these things aren't funny, and it has some really great guest stars who pop up, you know, throughout this, you know,
really good,
you know, people who've been around for years, like Eleanor Braun and John Bird and, you know, all these great people. There's nothing wrong with that, but it's like, it's not very sophisticated. You're right. Blackadder, at its best, was actually, I'm sure we'll do Blackadder one day, but I will never forget, year 10, when I was in year 10, so this would be 1997 in school, to teach us about World War One, they actually showed us the last ever episode of Blackadder Goes Forth, which is astonishing to think that that's what they actually did, and it worked so well. We all came out of that class understanding completely what that was all about, the big push, all that stuff, and that's the brilliance of something like that, because it was hilarious, but it also, you also understood the context for the jokes. And I don't really think with Paris you ever really understand the context for the jokes, because it just uses this French environment. And to its credit, it doesn't have everyone walking around doing all these silly French accents, really. You know, it doesn't really do that, which is good. But at the same time, there's only moments where you get the sense of that. Like, there's one episode where Rocher, Neil Morrissey's quite fey, foppish, sidekick, he decides to become a communist. And then there's quite a few jokes about communism and fascism and how, you know, who am I? What should I do? And that kind of, which is quite funny. But it's like, there's not enough of that for me, you know, throughout. I was hoping that that's what you would get more of, but you don't.
No.
It ends up just resorting to fairly obvious comic cliches from sitcoms you've seen do this stuff better before.
Well, this is another problem, just sort of like that I'd kind of forgotten until I was rewatching it. Rewatching, I basically had the same reaction that I did when I watched it first time. Although, like I say, we watched what was on, so I watched all six episodes. Even though after the first episode, I was like, "It's not very good." But the thing that struck me was, there's a lot of stolen gags. Or maybe I'll be fair and say a lot of reused classics, it's like, again, not to digress, but sort of cards on the table. I'm not really a Linehan Matthews fan. I was very aware of them from writing on Alexi Sale. And yes, yeah, sketch shows, hit and miss. Even the best sketch shows are a bit hit and miss. So the fact that I loved Alexi Sale, his sketch show, but didn't necessarily like the stuff that Linehan and Matthews were writing, it's like, this sitcom is not good. And it feels like it's been written by sketch writers. I am one of the few people, there's probably a club of about eight of us out there, who really dislikes Father Ted. So I don't like Father Ted.
No, really?
It's absolute shit. But I'm not really a fan of Linehan and Matthews. I'm sure we'll talk about Ted at some point.
I am definitely not a fan of Linehan for reasons we won't go into. But then,
well, yeah, no, thing. Absolutely. But yeah, I could definitely tell you a few things.
Yeah, I'm sure you can. I am a fan of some of his comedy, though. I'll be honest. But fair enough. It's not for everyone, and those kind of shows are definitely an acquired taste. I do get where you're coming from.
But I think, I don't like Father Ted. Black Books, I was like, it's all right. It probably is it's a slightly stronger show, I think, because Dylan Moran is involved, and Linehan in particular, he kind of leaves at some point anyway. So Black Books, very strong performances. I was kind of like, yeah, take it or leave it. Tried to rewatch it recently. I was actually surprised by how slow it was, how slow, and there aren't many gags in it. And then the IT Crowd, obviously that's Linehan, on his Todd, really. IT Crowd, I hated it when it first started. Then I had at the time, my partner was a big fan and she was working on it. And so I kind of got into it and had a bit more of an appreciation for it. But my sort of through connection with these guys as writers is that basically I don't really like their work very much.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
But I can absolutely see where Father Ted is their biggest success. And of course I don't like it. And some of the reasons I dislike it are the reasons it's so successful. But you can absolutely see where they've kind of learned lessons from Paris. And funneled that into Father Ted. There are many reasons why Father Ted is a huge success, and a lot of it is basically it's kind of similar with that anarchic sense of humour and that slightly surreal, sometimes childish, deliberately silly, almost winking at the camera. Father Ted, like Paris, these are shows that know they are sitcoms. They never really break the fourth wall. Nobody ever turns around and kind of, winks at the camera a la, Mrs. Brown or anything horrendous like that. But these are shows that that know their sitcoms.
Can I just say, if you ever suggest we do an episode on Mrs. Brown's Boys, I might have to leave this podcast.
Oh, my God. Full digression. Feel free to cut this out at a later date. But my number one theory on why Mrs. Brown's Boys is such a success is that people at some point 10 years ago, people were tricked into thinking it was a bit like Father Ted. I'm convinced that's the only reason. Like, people love Father Ted. Mrs. Brown comes along and people are like, oh, that's a bit like Father Ted. And that's why they like it.
I actually think you're right. I actually think there is connective tissue in many ways, because he's trading on stereotypes. And to be fair, Father Teddy's full of stereotypes. It is full of stereotypes. There's no getting away from that.
Yeah.
It is full of very, very obvious, and to be fair, probably quite racist stereotypes nowadays, or quite offensive ones about Irish people and Irish culture. However, and that would be, you know, a completely different discussion, but I think there is definite connective tissue between these very performative format break, you know, fourth wall breaking shows that bring the audience into the comedy and make them collectively part of it, and stuff like Father Ted. And then if you go further back, stuff like Paris, but that is sort of bordering the line, as we've said, between that comic strip anarchism and, you know, the older school sort of Hancockian nihilism, and brewing it all together. But it never really works, because it doesn't really... The reason I think Father Teddy's fantastic is because I think it really understands how to execute a joke. I think it really understands how to execute a visual or dialogue-based joke, and it has really strong performers. And that's the other thing here. The performers aren't necessarily bad, but they're not quite... They don't quite have the material, or they're not quite necessarily in the roles that perfectly fit them. So... I think, you know, it's always the way with a successful comedy, isn't it? So many of these successful comedies, just on the page, they're never going to be amazing. It needs other things. The alchemy of how to make something like this click when it's performed. And it doesn't really have that, Paris, I think.
No, it doesn't. And I think, you know, not to talk too much about Father Ted, and I'm sure we'll do an episode all on Father Ted at some point, I'm sure.
That means you've got to rewatch it all, though.
I've watched some of it once. That's enough. I'll watch that episode with Richard Wilson, because that was a they did a funny gag in that. But I think it's that thing that you know, these shows were very close together, and I guess from a, you know, sitting to wait to get a call from your agent, it's you're almost there, kind of like, well, is it going to be Paris or is it going to be Ted? It's like that would be the situation they're in, because they were so close together. And who knows if Father Ted had been on at a slightly later, you know, time slot, or if Alexei Sayle had done something a bit interesting for another channel that got, you know, that got Paris a repeat screening on Channel 4. Maybe we would be sitting here talking about that bizarre, quirky show that you can only find on YouTube called Father Ted, while I break everyone's heart saying that I didn't like Paris, which ran for 10 series, you know. So it's like, but I think Paris is a weak show. It's, you know, you can see the through line of Linehan and Matthews as writers, you know, from the sketches that they produced. And from that point of view, I think it is a fascinating footnote, particularly in their careers, and particularly in relation to Father Ted. It's a fascinating footnote, because you can see sketch writers trying to write a sitcom and it doesn't really work. It doesn't quite click. And then they move on and they write another sitcom which does work and does click. And you can talk about, you know, I can be glib about it and say, well, the thing about Father Ted is that it's got loads of catchphrases, so instantly people can remember catchphrases. And you've got a very strong cast, you've got a bit of a straight man in there, you know, you've got something more relatable because it's contemporary, even though it's not really contemporary, and it's, you know, it's set in Ireland and people find the Irish cute and whimsical, and also, you know, people are a bit racist towards them. So there are all these other things. And also, they are two Irish, you know, like, we've got Irish writers. Sorry, you've got Linehan, rather. So you've got an Irish writer, you know, you've got kind of like, you're writing what you know. It's like they, you know, neither of them were like French impressionist painters. But they do have an understanding of Irish culture, or at least how to lampoon it. So I think it's a fascinating footnote, Paris, as bad as it is. And whilst a lot of the things that are wrong with Paris, for me, I see those same problems with Ted and Black Books and the IT Crowd and other bits and pieces that they've done. Whilst I see a through line of what I dislike, I also think it's a fascinating through line of their evolution as writers.
And it,
you know, we've talked a lot about Ted, but it's definitely so adjacent to Father Ted that I think it's really relevant to compare them.
No, it is. It is, because they're of the same era. They're on the same channel, and they are both, in some ways, trying to do similar things. And I think there is that sense that they're both about characters who believe they should be in circumstances that they are undervalued. You know, Ted's classic thing is that he's landed on this island full of these simpletons, and he thinks he should be, like, in Dublin, you know, living the high life. And he's only there because he's tried to embezzle the church, basically. And they just took him on an island to punish him, really, and put him out of the way. And with Degu, it's that whole thing that he wants this fame and glory because he believes he's Picasso, you know, it's essentially. He believes he's one of these greats. He's Van Gogh, you know, and there's a lot about... there's one episode where he cuts off one of his... He tries to cut his ear off, I think, or like Van Gogh, and they all comment about that. They go, it's like Van Gogh and all this kind of thing. So it's... there's a lot of clear... And, you know, in the end, Degu basically, to become recognised, he decides to go insane, quote marks, and gets himself locked in an asylum for years... to try and get him... And then the moment he gets locked up, people start to look at his paintings and see something there. And he goes, oh, I've got to be locked up for people to like me and all this kind of thing, which is quite funny.
And this is it. It's like, I mean, the best gag in the whole series is that kind of... Because they actually start to scratch the surface of some satire, proper satire of the art world and the irony of what Degu is trying to do.
Yeah.
It's a good gag. It would have been interesting to see a second series.
Yeah. And see where it went. Yeah, no, I know. And that's the thing. So there is promise here. It's just so bleak, though. I mean, there's so many characters who talk about suicide, and there's one episode where a young boy, Degu's like, jump off a bridge then, I don't care. And he goes, I will. And he jumps up, and they think he's dead. They think for half the episode, they think he's dead. And he's like this teenage boy who's, he's a dick, this boy. But... it doesn't matter. It's just full of people saying, oh, yeah, I tried to kill myself today and all this kind of thing. And it's just very... It's very nihilistic in the same way that Ted is quite nihilistic in its own way, you know, and Black Books definitely is. You know, Bernard Black is essentially a modern day Hancock kind of character.
Definitely.
And there is this real vein of this nihilism about the universe, and that everything is in some way sort of tethered back to death in this weird way. There's a darkness to it all that runs through this humour. But I think with Paris, it's almost like maybe it too quickly immerses you into that without anything else to bring you out of it.
I think part of the problem is the quality of the writing. And let's maybe, you know, again, we're talking about, you know, this is an early project for them, so they haven't necessarily learned, you know, how to write in this kind of way. I think there's a sense that if you think about some of the earlier, especially on the BBC, you know, we're talking about the sort of the young ones, the first series of Blackadder in particular, but later series of Blackadder, a lot of those kind of like those slightly surreal anarchic shows, especially Blackadder in that kind of historical setting, is that they have a kind of a casual approach to life and death. Like, I've always felt that Blackadder works if it's set in a time where you can sort of get away with murder. Like, Blackadder has to exist in a period in time when Blackadder can kind of murder people and it's almost morally okay.
Yeah.
So, of course, you go back further in history and he's tricking people into lobbing their heads off and, you know, getting people executed and that kind of thing. And then you hit the First World War. It's a little, you know, it's a little bit dodgier, but he can sort of send people to do dangerous missions just because he annoys them, or he can get spies shot and stuff. So you kind of have to have Blackadder set in a period of time where you can sort of morally get away with murder. But they also make the murders very silly and very funny. So somebody being killed is a punchline. You know, somebody being tricked into taking poison is a punchline. And in the same way with the young ones, is that you have, you know, people doing massive physical harm to themselves, like a cartoon, it is a punchline. And I think that Paris kind of, it wants that, but it's actually not sophisticated enough. And the writing isn't clever enough to do it. It never, the comedy isn't really, really dark comedy. The comedy is quite frothy and quite silly, but it's kind of like they thought, oh yeah, but, you know, people killing themselves because, you know, Paris and artists, ha 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 ha. Yeah, annoying boys jumping into the river, ha 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 ha. And there's a sort of a sense of But it kind of like the cruelty of not caring about people dying comes through in a way that I don't think it does in stuff like Blackadder. And I think again, it's a sign of the immaturity, like professionally speaking, the immaturity of the writing from the writers, that they can't quite nail that sense of death and destruction as being funny or really dark. It's just, yeah, it's oddly bleak that people are kind of like jumping off bridges or talking about their 37th suicide attempt. And it's that itself is never quite funny enough to be a punchline. It's like a character says, oh, I tried to kill myself this morning, didn't work. The idea of an artist constantly trying to kill themselves and it not working, that's a really funny gag, which somehow this show makes not funny.
Yeah. And I think that is part of the problem, I think, in that it's weird how it can't translate these things into something that actually works. Maybe in a way it was trying to be these other kind of sitcoms too much. I mean, this comes from a stable, doesn't it, of Channel 4 comedy that is, particularly in the 90s, I would say, quite weird and edgy and strange. And, you know, most of them only ran for like one series and have been only really recognised in cult circles now. And I think you watch more of these, admittedly, than I did. I think, to be honest, most of what I was watching in the 90s on Channel 4 was Eurotrash, which I'm sure you watched as well. I loved Eurotrash for lots of reasons.
Hello.
Yeah. Hello, I'm Antoine de Gons. I love that show. But in fact, do you know what, Sonny? It's not a sitcom, but we should do an episode on Eurotrash, I think, because it'd give me an excuse to go on YouTube and try and find episodes of Eurotrash, because that is
sitcom
hilarious.
Sitcom adjacent.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, is Parrish trying to be too much of, in its own way, a conventional show that people will understand? And in that respect, it should have leaned more into the expressly weirder and stranger sort of comedies that you would get in around this period.
Well, you know what I think is a big factor with Paris. And I think Paris is a great example of this. And yeah, I was watching all these weird sitcoms, and there's a whole, almost like a subgenre of these kind of like mid-90s weird Channel 4 sitcoms that, yeah, they had like one series and stuff. You know, I've talked about Terry and Julian when we've been chatting. You know, that was one that I really liked, which is, again, falls into that category. Nightingales had a couple of series, but again, falls into that category of weird. So there's something about the aesthetic of these Channel 4 sitcoms as well, that they all look like the set has been built in a warehouse. There's a sort of a weird, there's a weird emptiness. You feel like the sets are all next to each other. It's not in a studio somewhere. But I think part of the problem, and Paris is the perfect example of this, and then Father Ted is the example of what happens next, is that I think that the BBC in the early 80s, they took all the chances on the alternative comics, the new wave comedy, and you had all the Rick Mayles and the Ben Eltons and all these people, you know, the French and Saunders. They were all being nurtured by the BBC in the early 80s, and so the BBC had this amazing wave throughout the 80s. You know, it's like the last Blackadder was 89, you know, and it's like you had this wonderful wave of these slightly surreal, anarchic, but incredibly well written, scripted and beautifully performed shows that we sort of lump into, you know, alternative comedy. And I think especially by the last series of Blackadder, that genre, if you like, was perfected. But then Channel 4, in the way that Channel 4 often does, and to, you know, to greater or lesser success, Channel 4 then kind of piggybacked that. Because you've got to remember that Alexei Sayle's show was on the BBC in the, you know, 80s. He was sort of like, you know, he was still part of that wave, that sort of like very BBC nurtured alternative comedy. Channel 4 come along in the early 90s, and they basically scoop up all this new wave comedy, and they start producing sitcoms like Paris, like Nightingales, but they're not as good. And I think part of that is because the movement, the kind of the alternative comedy movement, was already gone. You know, I mean, in Channel 4, obviously they had the comic strip, which, you know, but even that was like a sort of a focused, more sophisticated version of that crazy anarchy comedy. So by the time you've got Paris, actually that style of comedy is a little bit out of fashion. It's moving away. So to have something so, let's say, Young Ones in its style as Paris, which I guess is, it's more like the Young Ones than that it is One Foot in the Grave. To have that kind of like that slightly out of fashion, you know, we're kind of over this now, the shouty alternative comedy, the very, very surreal. We're kind of bored of that. We've done that. We've seen that for 10 plus years. So I think Channel 4 had this weird bubble where they were trying to do that and it didn't really work. And it produced all these weird shows. But then Father Ted, I think, is kind of like the first step on the next version of that. So the DNA of Father Ted is far removed from your kind of your Young Ones and your Filthy Rich and your Blackadder. It's far removed from that, but it leads us into a next stage of slightly surreal, slightly bizarre comedy and the Black Books, and you know, later on you kind of get IT Crowd, maybe even bringing you into Spaced and that kind of thing. So Father Ted is kind of like the next phase, right at the beginning of the next phase. And Paris is kind of stuck in the middle.
Yeah.
And it's not one thing or the other. And I think that's the problem. It's just not one thing or the other. It's like you've got good actors in support roles, but you don't give them anything to do. You've got a name in the lead role, but he's not good enough to carry it. And then the writing is derivative and sloppy, and it's not very funny, and the best gags have all been stolen from other places. So it's a really weird middle ground, you know. And maybe it's a necessary stepping stone in comedy. And I think particularly for those writers, it was probably really important that they made. If they hadn't made Paris, then Father Ted, as much as I'm not a fan, then Father Ted might not have worked because of what they learned.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Doing Paris, they were able to funnel into Father Ted. So I think Paris is like a necessary evil. It's like, the shows like Paris had to exist so that we understood as an audience, and so that the creatives understood what we as an audience were looking for next.
Mm. Yeah. I think you're right. And you get that, don't you, in cinema? You get it in drama where you get these people who make these big successes, they make these great things. Then when you go back further into their career, they make weird little missteps. And you're like, how did they, you know, how did like Spielberg make that? Although I don't think Spielberg ever really did, really. But you know what I mean? Someone like that, you go, how did they make that film?
Yeah, well, Hook. Well, Hook's pretty lame.
I loved that as a kid. But yeah, I can't bring myself to watch it as an adult now because I feel like the magic would just drain from my childhood. And do you know what? In a way, I feel like that way about some of these sitcoms that we're going to explore over time, because some of them I haven't watched in years and I'm a bit terrified of watching things that I loved when I was a kid, like Keeping Up Appearances, and I find them terrible now and I'm like, oh, please, you know. So it's going to be a real eye-opener. It's interesting when you watch something like Paris that you have no connection with. It's almost easier to analyse something like that. But when it's something that you really love, it's a lot harder to unpick the faults as well as the, you know, the good things, I suppose.
Yeah, I think you're right. And it's like, I mean, there are some shows, you know, not even there's research for this. There are some sitcoms that I didn't like as a kid growing up that I've kind of like watched a few episodes recently. It's like, you know what? I appreciate this more now. Like I didn't like Hello, Hello. I thought Hello, Hello was rubbish when I was a kid. And then I've kind of like gone back, you know, in recent years and watched a few episodes, especially from the first series, and been like, actually, this is, I quite like what you're doing here. This is better than my memory of it. This is a bit more sophisticated than I thought. And I think we'll probably have a lot of that.
Yeah. You now enjoy Zifola Madonna. There's the big boobies. more, don't you?
Fall of Madonna was a big book. You know what? Like, there are some really clever gags in there.
No, there are. There are.
Hair Flick. Hair Flick. What a good,
do you know,
what a clever name.
Do you know, there was a, I swear, this is true, a friend of mine 3 years ago lived in Doncaster, and there was a hairdresser's in Doncaster called Hair Flick. And I thought that was
brilliant.
Genius. Genius. Almost as good as Kebabalon, which I saw somewhere as well. But you know, this just anyway, whole other discussion. Let's finish up then with Paris by thinking about a couple of questions. So firstly, is there of the six episodes that exist, is there a choice episode that you think, if anyone was going to dip into Paris and have a look at this, of the six we've got, is there one that you would recommend them go and watch that might best represent this show?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, there's only six episodes. None of them are very good.
No, none of them are great, are they, to be fair? It's true, yeah.
I suppose maybe, what is it? Legimiques. Legimiques. Legimique. Yeah, the gimmick episode. That's probably got the most jokes in it. Like, rewatching it, I was like within the first couple of minutes, I was like, okay, there are actually some funny jokes in here. Several of them are stolen from other places. I was actually really surprised. And you know, sometimes you look back at something old and you think, oh, is it just that they did the joke first in other places? Like, no, they've just pinched jokes here. But that's a whole other debate for different sitcoms. But I do actually think that these guys are quite cheeky for that. I think they do actually do that more often than not. But yeah,
joke
so
thieves.
That's
yeah.
joke thieves, joke borrowing, joke recycling, however you want to class it. Yeah, so I think that's episode, that's the third episode, Legimiques. And that's, yeah, basically, Degu is trying to get a commission, and it's this point that all the artists are, they're all coming up with gimmicks to try and make them interesting. And that's, it's not bad. I found it funniest. It had the most actual jokes in it. Maybe the last episode. Well, weirdly, the last episode is the nearest they get to any kind of proper satire on the culture of art. And the last episode is also actually quite funny. John Bird is in it, and every scene with him, it is genuinely.
He's good. Yeah,
it's real. Those are really funny scenes, and I think it's this kind of like learning curve that the writers are on. His stuff, there's a kind of a control to the anarchy of it. But I think so much of that comes down to him. You know, Alexei Sayle is still not very good and the writing is still wobbly, but John Bird is so on point.
He
completely sells his scene.
There's a great couple of jokes that episode. The one is in the asylum. There's some really funny visual jokes. There's a poster on the wall that says, "You must be fucking insane." And it actually says,
"Yes,
fucking insane." Yeah. Like, there's no, and I was like, brilliant. And then the other one, is when he's talking to Degu, and Bird plays a psychiatrist, essentially. And Degu doesn't think much of him. And Bird says, "How long do you think I've been practicing psychiatry?" And Degu says, "An hour." And that's one of the funniest. Genuinely made me laugh out loud. I think it's just the way he delivers.
I was making a list of actual jokes as I was watching. It was like, there's a
that
joke.
That was really funny.
And that utilizes Alexei Sayle's delivery style very well as well. It actually highlighted the whole six episodes.
I think I would probably go for L'Insanity, which is that final episode. Or maybe L'Infamy, which is the first one as well. The first one actually isn't bad. It's got some decent... That's the one with the communism, fascism jokes in it and the...
Yeah, I think...
The trial at the end with the batty old judge and things like that. It's more obvious, but it's for that reminded me of Blackadder a bit more in a way, that one, actually, that first episode.
It was... Eleanor Bron was basically playing Queenie in that episode.
She was.
She was basically
channeling Queenie. So there's, you know... But I think L'Insanity is probably the best one. And it's a bit of a shame, because that was the last one, and they might have started to find their feet a little bit there. And actually... A second season might have been a bit stronger.
Yeah, agreed. You know. Yeah, and I think you're very right. The episode one and episode six, and maybe because it is a little bit more focused on the actual narrative of the characters, you know, introducing them and then sort of like saying goodbye to them, whether indefinitely or not, I think that they are stronger because they are a bit more focused. And then it's all the episodes in between where they just don't really have anything to say or to do. They don't have any real, you know, other than Degu either try to sell a painting or get his leg over. You know, that's kind
yeah,
of...
Yeah, basically.
That's it. Whereas though that first and that last episode actually have some stakes, I guess, some purpose to them. Mm.
Yeah, I think they do. So, yeah, I would check those out. I will be naughty and I'll put the link to the YouTube of this in the show notes. We shouldn't really link to YouTube rips and things, but because it's not very ethical. But there is literally no other way to watch Paris. So if it means you actually, actually engage with this after you've listened to this or before or whatever, then hopefully you go and check that out. It's very rough. It's very VHS. So stick with it. But it's all there in one video. Well, actually, five of the six are there.
The adverts are great.
The ads are great.
Yeah.
There's one missing, though, isn't there? There's one episode missing. But, yeah, so the last question then, really, and we've sort of touched on this, I guess, is has Paris stood the test of time over the last 27 years now since it first aired?
Paris didn't stand the test of time over the first 27 minutes that it aired. So I think for all the reasons we've touched on, you know, it was a first attempt for writers who've both gone on to do much better, much more successful projects. It was the wrong kind of vehicle for its main star, and the style of comedy I think was already falling out of fashion. It's a little bit it's not too offensive. I was wondering, kind of, especially with Linehan's where he is now, I was thinking on the rewatch, it's like, right, are we going to see a lot of really inappropriate jokes? I think there are maybe one or two moments where it kind of touches on being slightly inappropriate, maybe offensive, but not to the extent that you would like say this show can never be shown again. And perhaps it's more a case of like there are a few kind of like juvenile gags which with hindsight we now kind of go, oh, he was a wrong one all along. But generally, I think in terms of a product, is it in its quality, it doesn't stand the test of time at all. It's an interesting, quirky, you know, especially if you are a fan of Father Ted. Which I hear some people are, apparently. If you're a fan of Father Ted, then I think this is a really interesting show to go and watch. Especially if you want to sort of see what they were doing almost at the same time. And you've got like some great early performances. I actually think it's like James Dreyfus, I think is probably better in this than he has been in any of his other sitcoms, to be honest.
Yeah.
Alan Cordner, I love Alan Cordner. He's a proper actor.
Yeah,
he's the nearest thing the show gets to a straight man. Actually, I think he sort of observes the world a bit more realistically. Oh, actually, I do really like. Sorry, I'm digressing. I really like the conceit there that everyone in Paris, everyone French, just speaks with their British accents.
Yeah,
but because he's Italian, he uses an Italian accent.
Yeah,
and I actually quite like that because it helps give you this sense of we're just getting the natural, you know, TV is translating the French language for us, but to signify that he is Italian, he has an accent. I quite like that. I don't know how sophisticated the thinking was that went into that, or if it was just that Alan Cordner was the only person who could do an accent.
It could be that. That's what I was thinking. It could also be the fact that they very quick, maybe they tried it where they all were talking like this, and then they very quickly realised that would be awful to listen to, especially Alexis Sayle.
Would have been horrendous.
Like talking like this, I'm a little...
Hello.
Yeah.
I'm a Scouse Frenchman.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
God,
I think horrible. They probably very quickly went, no, we can't do that. But Alan Cordner, because he's an actor, an actual actor, he can actually do that accent. But you're probably right. I think, to be fair, I think Neil Morrissey's quite all right in this as well, given what he has to do. He's playing the same kind of character he plays on Men Behaving Badly to some extent as well. He's sort of honing that slightly, you know, charming thicko kind of character.
Yeah, I think we forget sometimes because of his massive success in that show that he was just a proper, you know, actor, came up through theatre, Hull Truck. Mm-hmm. He was like we kind of think of him as, you know, comedy actor. But I've got a lot of time for Neil Morrissey as an actor, and I think he's very good. I think the whole support cast actually are very good. You know, Walter Sparrow's in there. It's like it's a really great kind of like great supporting cast, and we've mentioned, you know, the guest stars.
Yeah,
and it has really good guest stars. You know, Rebecca Front. Yeah. I adore Rebecca Front. You know, she's in there, and yeah, Windsor Davies and John Burden, all these fantastic
Patrick Marber, David Schneider, a lot of the people who
Patrick Marber
went on
yeah.
to do a lot of the Armando Iannucci, you know, stuff, Partridge,
yes.
Day to Day, Friday Night Armistice, yeah. all that stuff that would come after this mostly.
It is, again, the whole show is yeah. So it hasn't stood the test of time, but I think it's worth a watch because it's so adjacent to all these other better, great projects. You know, it's adjacent to you know, the Young Ones and the Ben Elton stuff, and then to the Armando Iannucci stuff, and then to Father Ted and beyond. It's like it's so intertwined with that, yet is this weird little failure. And it was an instant failure, you know, because it's shit. But it's really...
Yeah, let's not beat around the bush. Yeah,
like so. If you're listening at home, folks, I would say that you should definitely go and watch this. It's yeah, utter shit.
You are not going to find a hidden gem. This is not a hidden gem. We've not spent an hour talking about a hidden gem. It's not, but it's interesting, and I think it would be worth anyone who's interested in comedy and the history of comedy and these actors and these creatives. It is worth watching, definitely, or at least worth watching the episodes we've mentioned. So yeah, you'll have access to the, if it's still there on YouTube, give it a whirl. But
yeah. Oh, the title sequence is really nice as well.
Oh, yeah.
The art they use for the title sequence, I like that.
It's quite fun, yeah. And the sort of off kilter sort of jazzy, yeah. It's true. That's the best thing about it, the title sequence.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, yeah, it's been fun to dig into it though, and go into this and explore a comedy that I haven't seen in the past. So I dare say we'll try and flip between, you know, the bigger known shows and some of these little curios at points as well, so that'll be fun to do. But we'll be back soon for another episode talking about some more comedy. Until then, Rob, why don't you point people towards where they can find you online?
Yeah, so the best place to find me is Twitter. That's kind of my hub, and it's Four Ducks on Twitter. And whatever I'm doing, whatever I might be working on, I usually sort of filter it through there. But also I am starting to do a bit more on the We Made This network. So keep an eye out for my name. I'll start popping up there. I've done a couple of the Real Talk podcasts, and hopefully I'll be doing a few more projects along with this in the future.
Yeah, you'll have been on Podcast 616 by this point with me, the Marvel Cinematic Universe one. So that's fun. That's going to be a laugh.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, check out what we're doing over there. You can find me on Twitter as well at AJ Black Writer, and the We Made This Network at WMT_network. You'll find all the shows and my own writing and about books and TV and movies is on thetruthisinhere.co.uk if you want to check some of that out. But thanks for joining us to talk about another episode. Yeah, we're part of the We Made This Podcast Network. Please subscribe to You Have Been Watching and give us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. And if you want to help out our network, please consider supporting us on Patreon if you go to patreon.com/WeMadeThis. Paris, Alexis Sales Paris, is not all we're discussing, so we'll give you a taste of what you might have missed on the network in a minute. Until next time, you have been listening to Tony Black.
And Robert Turnbull.
And we're off to do some painting like a pair of shit Picassos. See you next time.
Elsewhere on We Made This.
Podcast 616, a Marvel Universe podcast.
I definitely noticed that they weren't the actual voice actors. It didn't bother me. It didn't feel strange or anything. I mean, we as viewers have become so accustomed to seeing, you know, Chris Pratt as Star-Lord, or Chadwick Boseman as T'Challa, or Dave Bautista as Drax, that in these instances, when we hear their voices and they don't necessarily match, it's like, oh, wait a second, you know, that's not the right person. But, you know, stepping outside of it for a moment, you know, these are comic book characters. We're introducing the multiverse, right? And now we are introducing all of these tangents of stories that can go in any different kind of direction. So they don't need to be the same actor. They don't need to be the same voice one-to-one, in my mind. And as a fan, I can accept this. I'm okay with that.
The Movie Palace Podcast.
yeah, is Truffaut somebody you found yourself drawn to over the years? Have you watched like a lot of his films?
So just in terms of like French New Wave, I think I've seen more Jean-Luc Godard than I've seen François Truffaut. But I really do love François Truffaut. I love his attention to realism and to small aspects of people's lives. And I love his stories and how character-driven they are. I've seen like Shoot the Piano Player, Jules and Jim, which isn't one of my favorites, but I'm trying to appreciate it more.
Shipwrecked and Comatose, a Red Dwarf podcast.
Craig Charles looks f***ing cool as Sebastian Doyle. Yeah. I'd love to look that cool. Oh, bad.
Craig Charles tends to look cool all of the time, though.
Well, true, but he looks more sophisticated cool than rocker dude with a band cool. And I'm getting old, I want to look sophisticated cool rather than rocker dude cool.
Craig Charles had apparently said that, you know, it's it was great to be able to play this version of Lister because that's more like me. Always being really the cool guy. which I thought was great.
Check out all of these shows and more on the We Made This podcast network.